Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 4. Text number 14. Yadvaksharam namagireditam. Yadvaksharam namagireditam drinam.
Yadvaksharam namagireditam drinam.
Sakrit prasangaragam asuhanti tat.
Sakrit prasangaragam asuhanti tat.
Pavita kirtim tam alange shasanam. Vannaho deshti shivanam shivetara.
Vannaho deshti shivanam shivetara.
Yad.
Yad.
Which?
Dvi
aksharam.
Consisting of two letters.
Nama.
Named.
Gira iritam.
Being pronounced.
Merely being pronounced by the tongue.
Dhinam,
persons.
Sakrit,
once.
Prasangat,
from the heart.
Agham,
sinful activities.
Ashu,
immediately.
Hanti,
destroys.
Tat,
that. Pavitrakirtim, whose fame is pure.
Tam,
him. Alangya Shasanam, whose order is never neglected.
Pavan,
you.
Aho,
O.
Dvesti,
envy.
Shivam,
Lord Shiva.
Shiva
Ittaraha, who are inauspicious. Translation. Sati continued, my dear father, you are committing the greatest offence by envying Lord Shiva, whose very name, consisting of two syllables, Shi and Ba, purifies one of all sinful activities. His order is never neglected. Lord Shiva is always pure, and no one but you envies him. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Since Lord Shiva is the greatest soul among the living entities within this material world, His name is Shiva. His name, Shiva, is very auspicious for persons who identify the body with the soul. If such persons take shelter of Lord Shiva, gradually they will understand that they are not the material body, but are spirit soul. Shiva means mangala or auspicious. Within the body, the soul is auspicious. Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. This realization is auspicious. As long as one does not realize his identity as the soul, whatever he does is inauspicious. Shiva means auspicious, and devotees of Lord Shiva gradually come to the platform of spiritual identification, but that is not all. Auspicious life begins from the point of spiritual identification. But there are still more duties. One has to understand one's relationship with the Supreme Soul. If one is actually a devotee of Lord Shiva, he comes to the platform of spiritual realization. But if he is not intelligent enough, then he stops at that point, only realizing that he is spiritual aham brahmasmi. If he is intelligent enough, however, he should continue to act in the way of Lord Shiva. For Lord Shiva is always absorbed in the thought of Vasudeva. As previously explained, Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Sabditam. Lord Shiva is always in meditation on the lotus feet of Vasudeva Sri Krishna. Thus, the auspicious position of Lord Shiva is realized if one takes to the worship of Vishnu, because Lord Shiva says in the Shiva Purana that the topmost worship is worship of Lord Vishnu. Lord Shiva is worshipped because he is the greatest devotee of Lord Vishnu. One should not, however, make the mistake of considering Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu to be on the same level. This is also an atheistic idea. It is also enjoined in the Vaishnavya Purana that Vishnu, or Narayan, is the exalted Supreme Personality of Godhead, and no one should be compared to him as equal. Even Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma, not to speak of other demigods. So in the Bhagavad Gita, these things are also explained by Lord Krishna to Arjuna, and both that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead above all the different demigods, including Shiva and Brahma, and this is accepted by Arjuna, Narada Muni, and Srila Vyasadeva, the compiler of all the Vedas. We see here Arjuna confirms in verse 43 of the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Apitasi lokasya characharasya tamasya pujasya guru garyan natrat samostab yari kaha kutonyo loke chai pratima prabhava. You are the father of this complete cosmic manifestation of the moving and the non-moving. You are its worshipful chief, the supreme spiritual master. No one is equal to you, nor can anyone be one with you. How then could there be anyone greater than you within the three worlds, a lord of immeasurable power? So, Bhagavad Gita, 11th chapter there, confirms the same truth over and over again. So, although you know, one should not make the mistake of thinking that Lord Shiva can be even on the same platform as Vishnu, or what to speak of greater than Lord Vishnu or Krishna, still one should understand the very auspicious position of Lord Shiva. Here it describes that Lord Shiva, he's always Visuddham Vasudeva Sabditam, he's always in meditation on the lotus feet of Vasudeva, Sri Krishna. And specifically, Lord Shiva, his task is the specific form of Krishna that he meditates upon in order to fulfill his role in this material world in relationship to all the living entities, the jivas, is in relationship to keeping them under a false sense of identity. That Lord Shiva, who is the Prabhu, the husband of Durga Devi, the personified material energy. So the material energy keeps everyone under a false ego, a hankara. And Lord Shiva, you know, his function, along with Durga Devi, is to deal with the living entities in their false sense of identity, who they are. And so in this world, we have a an identification with the body. So all living entities in this world are identifying that they are the body. If one follows Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva can actually also remove that sense of false ego, that I am this body, and allow one to understand that one is a spirit soul, a aham brahmasmi. And then, if one follows in the footsteps of Lord Shiva even further, Lord Shiva can place one, award one the mercy of the worshipful Lord that he meditates on specifically, and that is Sankirshan. Sankirshan, who is an expansion of Vasudev, Krishna, Lord Narayan in the spiritual world, expands for his pastimes into four features to assist in his pastimes. So Lord Narayan expands as Vasudev, the presiding deity of consciousness. So in the spiritual world, by the grace of Vasudev, all living entities have consciousness, spiritual consciousness, eternal consciousness. And the Lord Narayan expands as Vasudev, also as Sankirshan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. Sankirshan, the presiding deity of one's identity. Pradyumna, presiding deity of the intelligence and senses. And Aniruddha, the presiding deity of the mind. So, of course, within the spirit soul, these features are all absolute. You know, they're not separate components. The spirit soul is conscious. The spirit soul has a sense of identity, which is not different from one's spiritual self. The spirit soul has a spiritual mind, which is not different from oneself. Spiritual intelligence. And the Chaturvyuha of Lord Narayan predominates. So each and every one of us is you know, we have an eternal spiritual identity. So this is the arrangement of Lord Narayan, and it is presided over by the Chaturvyuha. So, you know, there's no mistake, so there's no duplicates. That, we made half a dozen spirit souls, they've got the same identity. You know, they're all unique. So this is, you know, the eternal arrangement of the personality of Godhead. So this is the Sankirshan, you know, awarding, you know, an individual identity. So the Lord expands himself, his energy, and although everything is the energy of the Supreme Lord, which is not different from him, yet he awards unlimited other living entities who all have their own separate identity from the Supreme Lord, even though at the same time they're non-different from the personality of Godhead being a manifestation of his energy. So this is quite a, you know, an inconceivable concept. But that is presided over. You know, the Lord makes this arrangement. And in all the different functions, whenever the Supreme Lord has a specific function, you know, there is an eternal form of the Lord that presides over that function. Whenever the Shakti, the Lord's energy, has a specific function, there's an eternal form of that Shakti, expansion of Shakti, who presides eternally over those functions. So Lord Shiva, he meditates upon Sankirshan because he is, you know, his role is connected with our identity. covering that identity, eternal identity, when we're in the material world. So then we're awarded a false identity. Or, by the grace of the Lord Shiva, one can be free from one's false ego or ahankara. And then, by following in the footsteps of Lord Shiva, taking up bhakti or devotional service to the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva Krishna, who Lord Shiva is meditating upon, then we are awarded our spiritual identity. So I was very fortunate that my spiritual master gave me a Shalagram Shila, which was Sankyushan, who had been worshipped in the Holy Dharam for many hundred years by Vaishnava Brahmanas. And anyway, he gave that Shalagram to me here in Melbourne. And so that was a Sankyushan Shalagram. So he had he showed me this box. It was like a soap box. It was like made of cardboard. So, you know, and he'd taken a new block of soap out and put the Shalagram in there in order for me to have something to carry him. So when I looked at it, you know, he said, "I have something for you." And I saw a box of soap in that cardboard. And he said, he said, "What's in here is not soap, but it will cleanse you of your material body." So, thank you, Sean. So Lord Shiva, he meditates, and therefore, you know, he has the snakes, the serpents, which represent Seshanaga, which is another feature of Sankarshan. He also has the, you know, the Ganges emanates from his tuft of hair, indicating that on his head, you know, he carries the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord, that he is worshipping you know, the personality of Godhead, Vishnu or Krishna, like that. So it is very clear just from looking at the pictures of Lord Shiva that actually he's a devotee of the Lord. But you know, you just have to look at him and you can see by the different features that he is a devotee of the Lord. So Lord Shiva is very auspicious. And even as his wife is saying to her father, that he's so auspicious that if you just say his name, you become purified of sinful activities. I'm trying to get as many Shivas in the class as I can. Shiva, Shiva, Shiva. So you become purified by just saying his name. He is the most auspicious spirit soul. Of course, he is a spirit soul, but he is on the platform of the personality of Godhead. So when the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is in intimate contact with the material energy, then he assumes the form of Shiva. And when he has no intimate contact with the material energy, he is in his form as Vishnu. And Shiva, of course, in the spiritual world, he doesn't exist in the form that we see him in this world. He has more a Narayan feature. So he is very, very auspicious. And but here we see that Daksha has become envious of someone who's very auspicious, and you know, so Daksha, so Sati is pointing out that, you know, he's Daksha is committing the greatest offence. You know, this Vaishnava apparat, all the different offences one can commit. Vaishnava apparat is most serious. So, if one... so this is, you know, a very interesting pastime, because actually Daksha is a devotee. You know, he's the demigods, they're all devotees of the Lord. Some of them may have, you know, some material aspirations and conditionings along with their, desire to serve the personality of Godhead. They would certainly perhaps understand, they would have heard the different philosophy that we are an eternal spirit soul. They would understand that as a spirit soul, one can ascend to heaven and then gradually one will fall to, from heaven, take another different body. So one has to be a spirit soul in order to understand how one is elevated to heaven and then comes back from heaven to this earthly realm when one's pious activities are finished. So any living entity, if they're very pious, they can become a daksha, they can become an Indra, they can become Brahma. Cannot become Shiva, because Shiva is, as we say, on the platform of above the Jiva, in between Jiva and Vishnu. But closer in identity with Vishnu than Jiva. So, here these demigods, they would have the basic knowledge that we are spirit soul. That's how we got to heaven, and they're devotees of the Lord. But here we see this Vaishnava apparat is coming from devotees. So therefore, the pastime is in Srimad Bhagavatam because it's something that. For the devotees to assimilate, to be very careful not to commit the Vaishnava parad. So, in other words, on the platform of devotional service, one may have come to the understanding that one is eternal and the eternal servant of the Lord, so such as personalities like Daksha would have that knowledge, one should rise above the neophyte platform. The neophyte platform means that they do not know how to properly associate with other Vaishnavas. They have a respect for the personality of Godhead, but their ability to associate with other Vaishnavas is not correct, and they can tend to commit offences because of envy. Envy comes from this platform of being on the bodily conception of life, because those who are properly situated on the spiritual platform and understand the personality of Godhead, there's nothing to envy, because the Lord's, it's like the sunshine. If someone is standing in the sunshine here, you don't have to fight for that. There's so much sunshine. The sunshine is all over the world. Just stand somewhere else. There's so many places you get some sunshine. You don't have to battle it out with someone else to, get a bit of sunshine. There's so much room, so much sunshine. The sun is, is not limited to one place and one person. So the Lord's mercy is like that. It's like sunshine. It's everywhere. So it's everywhere and it's unlimited. There's no need to be envious of other devotees that somehow, they're in my way of the Lord's mercy. But neophytes are like that, because their understanding of the personality of Godhead and their understanding of Vaishnavas is not complete. So there's a tendency to become envious. Still, not just neophyte devotees, sometimes even advanced devotees can fall to that platform. We saw in that Srila Prabhupada was the subject of some envy from his godbrothers, who also committed Vaishnava aparad, become critical and a little envious of his successes. So, it is possible for even advanced devotees to suffer from that. Vaishnava is very a very serious consideration. Here, Sati is pointing this out. This is the greatest. This is the thing to be most careful of. It's very, very dangerous. It's the worst thing you could do. And, there's in the Bhagavad Gita, this is actually touched upon in the Bhagavad Gita as well. So really, this is part of the ABCs of every devotee. Every devotee is read the Bhagavad Gita should understand this from the very beginning. You see in this chapter, Bhagavad Gita 11, text number 49, you can now see the form you desire. Purport. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was worried about killing Bhishma and Drona, his worshipful grandfather and master. But Krishna said that there is no need, that he need not be afraid of killing his grandfather. When the sons of Dhritarashtra tried to disrobe Draupadi in the assembly of the Kurus, Bhishma and Drona were silent, and for such negligence of duty, they should be killed. Krishna showed his universal form to Arjuna just to show him that these people were already killed for their unlawful action. That scene was shown to Arjuna because devotees are always peaceful and they cannot perform such horrible actions. The purpose of the revelation of the universal form was shown. Now Arjuna wanted to see the forearm form and Krishna showed him. So you see there that one of the reasons Krishna showed Arjuna, apart from, you know, establishing, you know, for Arjuna's purpose was to establish Krishna as the personality of Godhead, because within the universal form all the demigods including Shiva and Brahma were there as subordinate aspects of Krishna in his universal form. But Krishna also had a purpose, that he was showing Arjuna that, you know, even personalities like Bhishma and Drona, who are also devotees of the Lord, when there was this, you know, Vaishnava aparad, this to Draupadi, in the assembly, they attempted to disrobe Draupadi, they were silent. You see how serious. So they didn't even do the aparad. They just didn't. They just allowed it. They were in a position where they should have said something, and they just allowed it. And for that, Krishna showed Arjuna they also will be killed. So serious, you know. So therefore, you know, just as Daksha is a devotee, it doesn't mean he will not suffer the reaction of Vaishnava aparad. And here we see also that personalities like Bhishma and Drona, just their silence was enough. So serious is you know, when something happens which is not proper towards a devotee. So so this Sati is pointing out to Daksha, you know, that this is a very, very, you know, serious activity, and that Shiva is very auspicious, and it says here that his order is never neglected. So Lord Shiva is authorized to perform the service he performs. So his order will not be neglected. What he needs to be to do is authorized by Vishnu or Narayan or Krishna. So Lord Shiva is acting as an instrument in the hands of the personality of Godhead. So his service will not be it can never be neglected. And we see also that Srila Prabhupada, he was authorized to spread the Sankirtan movement. He was authorized by Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the Vaishnava Acharyas. And although there are attempts from all different, practically from every angle, to prevent, stand in the way, dissuade, or what have you, you know, discourage, none of it could have any effect, because by the will of Krishna, Prabhupada was carrying the order of Krishna. It will not be neglected like that. And here also, Arjun, Krishna says to Arjun, you be an instrument in my hands. And Arjun's order and his will was also not to be neglected. So this is the safe position for a devotee. The safe position for a devotee is to always just be the humble servant carrying the order of the spiritual master, carrying the order of the Vaishnava. So, you know, that is the safe position. You know, the devotees, they just want to be the humble servant, the servant of the servant of the servant, of the personality of Godhead, the maintainer of the gopis. That is the safe position, that servant position. And simply, the order of Krishna is coming down through the cyclic succession, through the guru, as we see through the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, the way he dealt with his disciples, the way he instructed ISKCON. You know, guru doesn't just mean, you know, one initiating personality. We have to be respectful. Vaishnav generally is guru. Vaishnav generally is guru. And one should be the humble servant of the guru. Now, being the humble servant of the guru, here we see Sati's position. She is, in fact, criticizing her father, who's also a devotee. So one may say, oh, you know, well, she's giving Vaishnava Param because she's criticizing a devotee, her father, who's a superior, in one sense. You know, she's not actually being critical. She's just pointing out that, you know, that this is her duty. It's constructive criticism meant for the benefit, you know. And she calls him, you know, my dear father. She's being respectful. She's trying to, you know. And but still, if one sees that, you know, Vaishnava aparad is being committed, you know, in a nice way, in a respectful way, one may help another devotee to understand, no, that should not be done. And that's constructive criticism. Of course, sometimes it's not our position. We have to be very correct, careful, as mentioned in the nectar of instruction, that one has to be very careful to give instruction to a devotee who's significantly, you know, in a superior position. In which case one may take it to their peers or their authorities, or, you know, something is happening and it's not very good. It's not my position to instruct such a person, but, you know, it's your position. This person is in danger because we understand it's very serious. Amongst our peers, sometimes we can, you know, our god brothers, if they're being a little out of hand, we may just, in a nice way, point out to them, you know, that actually your behaviour towards your other peers is incorrect. And, you know, in a nice way, try to correct them like that. And certainly, if someone is younger, devoted, then one may correct them, because it's a very serious thing. The difficulty with familiarity breeds contempt. That sometimes, because we're always in association of Vaishnavas, we may sometimes lose the concept of the danger of mishandling our dealings with other Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis. you know, to give an example, sometimes, you know, if we're in a car, because we have a lot of freeways and what have you, generally you travel at 100. If you're going interstate, you might travel 110 kilometres. And it really seems like, you know, you don't even notice you're going fast, you know. After a while, you know, you're sitting in the car, you're playing with the CD, and fiddling around with some papers and, you know, talking to the people in the back of the seat. You're flying along, you know, 110 kilometres. But you become familiar. So you lose, you completely lose sense of the danger. But, for instance, out here in Dane Street, you know, if you get in your car and say, before you hit the next intersection, if you quickly accelerate to 110 kilometres, you'll understand, well, this is dangerous. You know, something comes in front of this car, another car, something very dangerous. You get that sense. But after you've been travelling that speed, the sense of danger, you know, so the familiarity like that. So these verses are here in the Bhagavad Gita to help us because it is very dangerous and we should be very careful not to become familiar, over-familiar. And no one is immune, even personalities such as Bhishma, what to speak of us. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Yeah.
You mentioned that when the Draupadi was destroyed, Bhishma was silent, Drona was silent, and then they got implicated in the offense and they got killed. So similar situation, when Daksha was blaspheming Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma was absolutely silent. He didn't escape him, he did not do anything. Not only he was silent in the instant when the blasphemy was happening, but thousands of years later, the second Yajna was performed, so he had thousands of years to reconcile these two great personalities and devotees. Apparently looked at the silence for both thousands of years and didn't do any acting to reconcile their differences.
Yeah. These things will be discussed in detail in this section. It's a big question. I won't go into it. It's a good question. Excuse me, but it will take me a while to answer that. And so I'm just going to leave that. But it is discussed. But generally, if I can just use the example of Bhishma, rather than, you know, taking so many other examples. You know, Bhishma was in a position of authority. And in the case with Bhishma, he was also... within the pastimes of Krishna, he fulfilled another purpose to demonstrate the a particular rasa where one literally, you know, challenges Krishna sort of in a fighting mood. So there are higher purposes also with Bhishma and similarly with Brahma, but we won't go into the Brahma aspect. But without getting distracted from other principles, as we see it in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada just mentions, you know, a very obvious point that we should take. So yes, there are many other considerations, but don't lose sight of the main thing. So in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada does impress upon us this. Yes, there's rasa in so many things, but we have to take this lesson. Apart from all other considerations, let's not get too philosophical, too much into rasa or this, that or the other. A very simple point. It says, when the sons of Dhritarashtra tried to disrobe Draupadi in the assembly of the Kurus, Bhishma and Drona were silent. And for such negligence of duty, they should be killed. It's a very simple point. So there are other considerations, how, you know, sometimes even, you know, different personalities who are somewhat facilitating the pastimes of the Lord, you know, there are other considerations there. I don't want to go into that at this stage. Let us just take the main point. The main point here in the Gita is explaining how serious it is, Vaishnava Aparad. Here, you know, they're actually very exalted personalities. And sitting there silently, they cop the reaction for a very serious, you know, event. That's really the point that I just want to impress on that. Yeah. We can take up that other, you know, if that comes up later, you can ask that question, but I won't take it up here. Mm.
Same thing happened that when Shishupala was offending Kushi in the assembly, there were all the great people there. Mm. They were ready to, you know, but Krishna said, no, I'll deal with it.
Mm.
So that's an example we can reflect on.
Yeah.
Also, that everyone is aware of the offense.
Mm.
But because, like you said, it's very serious, they're afraid to even do anything, because they already know that the Krishna is there, that he'll deal with it.
Mm.
Obviously.
And even when Krishna cut off Sisapala's head, he did so with his chakra, but his head landed somewhere else, wasn't it? He didn't want to. The way he killed Sisapala was in such a way that it didn't sort of disrupt or disturb Yudhisthira's, you know, wonderful event. You know, so you know, there are other, as you're saying, you know, from what we see in the purport of the Bhagavad Gita, it appears that Krishna would have expected them at that stage to not sit silent. And then sometimes, as you said in the arena, which is a good example, you know, that Krishna's, you know, for the sake of Yudhisthira, may not want, you know, a big brawl at Yudhisthira's, you know. So it's like if someone's getting married, someone's out of hand, you know, you don't want to disrupt the wedding. You know. But at some stage, you know, after the proceedings, you know, things will have to, you know, so. You know, if someone comes into the temple room, you know, and they're being offensive, we try and deal with it in such a way that we don't disrupt the whole temple. At the same time, something you know is done. So you know, there are considerations there. Yeah, thank you.
The Guru, as you said, it could be facilitation of Lord's plan, because Sati had to lose her body. She had to. So Lord's plan was here, and Bhagavatam is teaching us how severe Vaishnava plan.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Classical example.
Krishna said to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, "Time I am, destroyer of the worlds." Time is his will. Krishna has a plan, and in the course of time, time represents exactly the will of the Lord for every living entity. By time controls everything that happens in this material world. So he has a plan. We cannot understand everything about Krishna's plan, what he has in mind for every single living entity. But what we can do is, you know, we understand the order that we're authorized to carry as the humble servant of the Vaishnavas. And if we carry the order of the Vaishnavas as a humble servant, then we are perfectly situated as one of the instruments within the plan of the Lord. That's the safe position. We don't have to know the whole plan of the Lord. Just like a child doesn't have to know everything the parents are doing. They just have to follow along. Everything will happen, you know. The child doesn't have to question everything, you know, just do this now. You know, I remember I used to ask my parents things. You know, why are we, you know, what is this? What is this? And they said, "We'll tell you when you're 21. I'll tell you when you're 21." So many questions. I'll tell you when you're 21. There was no need for me to know then. By the time, you know, I got to 21, I understood. So, we don't have to know everything about the plan of the Lord. We can even barely understand, you know, the vision of Srila Prabhupada. You know, such a vision. As Srila Prabhupada said, if they knew, you know, the Western world, if they knew what I intended to do, they wouldn't have let me in the country. You know, no one, you know, even his disciples, no one could understand. What to speak of Krishna? So, you know, the safe position just to be an instrument in the hands of the Vaishnava, of the spiritual master, and that is a safe position. And to do that, one has to be off the bodily platform. As soon as we act for our own subtle or gross sense gratification, for profit, adoration, distinction, or, you know, for any other facility or purpose for ourself, it disrupts our ability to be an instrument in the hands of the Lord. One has to be free from false ego in order to be, that is the position of then becoming the servant of the Lord. That's the beginning. And therefore, Lord Chandas the Kaur sings, that, you know, Lord Chaitanya has made the Sankirtan movement very easy, so simple, so easy, and so enjoyable. But there's one qualification: you actually have to avoid sense gratification, because then you can't take it up. Although it's so easy, so simple. So we have to, no other motive except, yes, let me please the Vaishnava, let me please the spiritual master, and that way we become the perfect instrument, and like Arjuna. And then, although we're a humble, a humble devotee, no power, no position, no great shaktis, no great knowledge or anything, but that order will not be neglected. Prahlad Maharaj says, there is no greater power in this universe than humility. But nothing about that. Someone who remains a humble servant of the Vaishnava, there's no power about that.
Yeah. One more point is coming in my mind in Anilila, that Gopinath Patnaik, he mishandled the money, inappropriately money of the Pratapudra. But Mahaprabhu had a plan. He had to go to Shanghi, and then he saved him completely. Exonerated all of him.
So let us pray that we may be humble servants and of the servant of the servant, and thus fitting with the plan of the Lord. Hare Krishna.